Germany is totally controlled by Russia.
Opening with a bang, President Trump knocks Germany at the start of the NATO summit. It's Thursday, July 12th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also coming up, China named the world's most innovative nation. The long-term effects of being trapped in a cave and building robots that help humans as they age. It's all coming up on today's VOA Asia. At a meeting of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization began on a confrontational note Wednesday, with U.S. President Trump singling out Germany for criticism. During a meeting with NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, Mr. Trump pointedly criticized Germany for allowing Russian energy company Gazprom to construct the Nord Stream 2 pipeline through its waters. VOA White House correspondent Steve Herman is traveling with the president. He spoke with VOA's Sarah Williams from Brussels.
Well, this was at a breakfast with the NATO Secretary General, not anyone from Germany, but you've heard the phrase breaking bread. Well, this was some sort of sour bread, I guess, at breakfast because the U.S. president really went after Germany. He focused on a deal that Germany has made with a Russian energy company, Gazprom, to construct this $10 billion Nord Stream 2 pipeline through its waters. And the president said, you know, here we are defending Germany while they're paying billions and billions of dollars a year to Russia. So how can you be tougher when a country is getting its energy from the country you want protection against? And the NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg noted that there are differences among NATO members about the pipeline and other issues, but he did give President Trump credit for beginning a reversal of declining defense spending among NATO members. And he also praised Trump for contributing extra money to the defense of Europe since Trump took office.
Was German Chancellor Angela Merkel present at that point?
No, she came later, and when she arrived at NATO, she made a quite pointed remark saying because she grew up in East Germany, she knows what it's like to have been under Soviet domination, and the United Federal Republic of Germany makes its own policies, and it's independent. Subsequent to that, there was what's called a pool-aside meeting. This is sort of an informal one-on-one meeting between the U.S. president and the German chancellor. And after that, a group of reporters was brought in to the room, and President Trump acknowledged that he did raise this issue with Merkel, and she replied that she looks forward to continued discussions with the United States because the United States and Germany are partners in so many ways. So she wasn't going to engage at that point in rebutting Trump, at least on camera.
You know, it was interesting because as Trump was leaving the White House for this trip, he was talking about various meetings that he would be having. And he said that he thought that his meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin would be among the easiest of the meetings and that, you know, there might be some more strains in meetings with European leaders. This is rather curious because these leaders of European countries have been very longtime allies of the United States.
Right, but these meetings that he has been having with these allies have been relatively strained because if it's not haranguing NATO members to contribute more to the common defense, there has been complaints from the U.S. president about trade and what he perceives as an unfair trade imbalance. And after he leaves here... Tomorrow, Thursday, he goes to London and will be meeting with Theresa May, the British Prime Minister, who suddenly finds herself embroiled in a big domestic a political upheaval stemming from what is essentially intra-party disagreements among the conservatives over terms for the country's exit from the European Union, known as Brexit. And Trump, when leaving the White House, also sort of stuck his finger into that one as well, commenting about Boris Johnson, who had resigned as May's foreign minister. And Trump referred to Johnson as someone who's been very, very supportive and very nice to him, and said, maybe I'll speak to him when I get over there, something that Theresa May probably would desire that Trump do not, that Trump does not do when he gets to London.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right about that. What is coming up for later this evening your time, Steve?
Well, the leaders will be having the dinner, the main initial session of the NATO leaders meeting has ended. We haven't had too much come out of that because the media was only allowed to witness the very beginning of that before they went into their classified discussions. And then there are more talks on Thursday morning before Trump gets back on Air Force One and takes the short flight over to the United Kingdom.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot for speaking with me.
My pleasure, Sarah.
Okay. All right. Bye.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
VOA White House correspondent Steve Herman reporting from Brussels. He spoke with our Sarah Williams. These are our top Asia stories currently trending on voanews.com. Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe visits flood-stricken parts of his nation as the death toll from flooding rises to 176. A suicide blast at an election rally in Pakistan kills at least 14 people, including a provincial candidate. China sentences veteran pro-democracy campaigner Chin Yung-min to 13 years in prison. And India's government asks the top court to rule on whether to repeal a controversial law that criminalizes homosexual acts. Expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. For the first time, China ranks in the top 20 most innovative countries in the world. That's according to the UN World Intellectual Property Association. VOA's Steve Barragona has more.
China rose 5 places to number 17 in this year's Global Innovation Index. The country has been rising steadily for years, says World Intellectual Property Organization Director General Francis Gurry.
There is an extremely careful strategy that has been put in place from the top leadership of China for encouraging innovation and ensuring that China becomes an innovation-based economy.
Gurry says China now leads the world in science and tech workers, publications, and patents. It's number 2 in research and development spending. The top spender, the United States, slipped 2 places on the index, from number 4 to number 6. But Gurry notes the U.S. tops the list of highly innovative regions.
The San Jose, San Francisco area, the Silicon Valley area, the Boston area, if you took them and treated them as countries, well, they would come out top.
The index compares how countries encourage inventions that drive economies and improve livelihoods. It looks at 80 factors, from education spending to high-tech exports to mobile app creation. The index also names 20 overachievers compared to their level of development, including India, Iran, Thailand, and Vietnam. 6 are in sub-Saharan Africa, the largest number of any region.
We already have had for a number of years, 8 years actually, Kenya in this group, and Rwanda and Mozambique are also starting to stand out as innovation achievers.
This year, the authors also focus on climate-friendly energy technologies. Gurry says the picture is mixed.
Between 2005 and 2014, we saw that the total number of patents in energy technologies almost doubled. But since 2015, there has been a relative decline.
There is good news, he adds. Innovations in green transportation and energy conservation technologies are growing. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, markets closed steeply lower Wednesday, with most major indexes tumbling following the release of a list of an additional $200 billion in Chinese goods on which the U.S. is considering imposing tariffs. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. With the trauma of being trapped in the flooded Thai cave complex now behind them, the young members of the Wild Boars soccer team are facing a new challenge, dealing with lingering emotional and psychological stress. As Faith Lapidus reports, mental health experts are assessing how their terrifying experience could impact their lives.
Psychiatrists and psychologists say in the days and months ahead, the boys' families will be encouraged to keep a cautious watch as normal life resumes. Child trauma specialist Andrea Denisi says some boys could begin to experience depression, anxiety disorders, and other mental health problems brought on by the stress.
I would expect most of the children, if not all of them, to have some emotional symptoms, to have had some emotional symptoms in the cave, and still have some outside when they're rescued. This is very normal, so there are normative responses to traumatic experiences.
Doctors say the fact that the boys were not separated, but stayed together with their coach, would have improved camaraderie and lifted the boys' spirits. But the extreme experience could lead to changes in their brain's wiring that could cause behavior changes, says forensic psychiatrist Neil Greenberg.
Someone who was developing into a daredevil, for instance, might decide that they were going to take less risks. That's possible. But we also might see the opposite, where actually someone who didn't think they could cope with situations like this would actually realize that they could. And so that might actually increase their resilience.
That is called post-traumatic growth, meaning that anything that does not kill us makes us stronger. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
This news alert from VOA Asia, bike-sharing giant OFO plans to slim down its Asia operations to 4 overseas markets, Japan, South Korea, Hong Kong, and Singapore. OFO is also rumored to be pulling out of India in a scramble to increase profits. This is VOA Asia.
I'm Victor Beatty. Since 1942, the Voice of America has been a consistently reliable and authoritative source of news. Today, VOA remains committed to providing an accurate, objective, and comprehensive news product at the top of every hour, every day. We can be heard on your local affiliate or streamed on the web at voanews.com.
This news alert from VOA Asia, the trendy jujube fruit, also known as the Asian red date, has been found to kill lung, breast, and prostate cancer cells, according to a study published in the journal Food and Function. All the big stories coming your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. U.S.-based electric car maker Tesla has announced it will be opening a wholly foreign-owned factory in Shanghai. Tuesday's announcement comes even as the tariff war between the two biggest economies heats up. Speaking from Shenzhen, China, East-West Institute Asian Studies professor Eric Harwit told VOA's Victor Beatty that this was a timely move by Tesla.
They've been thinking for the last few months about opening a car factory in Shanghai. And the Chinese government, I think, realizes that American car makers may face higher tariffs in the future because of the trade war. So this gives a chance for Tesla to bypass those potential impacts of the trade war, of the higher tariffs on imported cars.
According to 24/7 Wall Street, the price of the Tesla Model S has gone up to $142,000 from the $115,000 because of tit-for-tat tariffs.
Yes, that's right. So the cars that are made in the United States are going to be more expensive in China, at least in the short term, while this trade war is going on. So this is kind of an insurance policy for Tesla. If they can make the cars in China, They can avoid those kind of import duties. And also they can save money by using Chinese labor for the manufacturing process. They can save by not having to ship the cars. Also, they can generate, I think, some goodwill by making the cars in China. And so they may get even some special preferences from the Chinese government when the cars are sold within the country.
China typically requires foreign automakers to set up joint ventures with Chinese firms when establishing such a manufacturing plant. But the joint statement Tuesday described the plant as a Tesla wholly owned gigafactory.
Just a few months ago, the Chinese announced that they would scrap within the next couple of years the rule that foreign ventures had to be jointly made with Chinese companies. In other words, now it will be possible for Tesla to have a wholly owned foreign enterprise. And that's really key for Tesla. They have some very sophisticated technologies for their vehicles, and so a joint venture wouldn't really work very well for them. So the ability now to have their 100% American-owned factory in China really makes it possible for them to use their best technologies and to have full management control over the venture and make the cars the way that they want to.
Also Tuesday, German automaker BMW announced a partnership with China's biggest SUV maker, Great Wall Motor, to produce electric versions of its mini cars.
You can see all the major electric car companies in the world are rushing to China. It's going to be the biggest market for electric vehicles in the coming years. In fact, the Chinese government targets by the year 2025 to have 7 million vehicles manufactured a year. If you're an electric vehicle maker anywhere in the world, if you're out of the China market, then you're not going to succeed.
That was Eric Harwit, professor at the East-West Institute Asian Studies Center in Shenzhen, China. Now on VOA Asia, the Trump administration's 25% tariff on imported steel has been welcomed by U.S. producers of the material, but slammed by American manufacturers that rely on a global steel supply chain to make everything from cars to razor blades. VOA's Michael Bowman visited a can company that is being squeezed by the new tariff and has this report.
Sheets of tin-plated steel transform into colorful containers for well-known American consumer products at Independent Can Company outside Baltimore, Maryland. A walk through the factory shows every step of the process.
We are the largest manufacturer of specialty tins in the United States. Thousands of tons of steel.
Steel prices are up due to a tariff imposed by the Trump administration.
The tariff actions taken by the president are necessary to revive America's essential steel and aluminum industries.
ICC does buy U.S.-made steel, but says imports bridge a gap in supply for high-grade tin-plated steel needed for blemish-free lithographic printing. The company says the mere threat of tariff-induced price hikes already cost them a $2 million order, and more pain is on the way.
If we're more than 5 to 10% higher than China, our customers will shop overseas. So it is very, very tight.
ICC is warning of possible job cuts. The company employs more than 400 workers, paying well above minimum wage.
There are craftsmen in here. They've been doing this for 20, 30, 40 years. I've been very successful, raised a family. So that's all I can ask for.
Borrell says a steel tariff makes no sense.
We need to get the trade jobs back in the United States. And you know, putting tariffs on raw materials, I don't think that's the way to go.
ICC has requested tariff exemptions. U.S. steelmakers filed objections, saying they have been harmed by imports and that they are ramping up tin plate production to supply ICC's needs. ICC says it has no guarantee when that will occur, at what price, or whether quality standards will be met. The Commerce Department has not acted on ICC's requests, but signaled that tariff exemptions will be rare.
relatively few of those will be granted because many of them have no substance.
How are we doing today? We're doing pretty well.
At ICC, frustration and a sense that Washington is not listening.
We can't fight two fronts. Fighting the development of the marketplace and our government is impossible.
ICC just installed a state-of-the-art assembly line that will expand production if the company has enough steel to run it and if it is able to keep prices competitive on its containers. Michael Bowman, VOA News, Belcamp, Maryland.
Finally, in this age of the smart machine, robots are increasingly playing roles in different fields. But what about caregiving for the elderly? VOA's Faiza El-Masri went searching for an answer. Faith Lapidus narrates.
88-year-old Olga Robertson has been living in her home for decades. The mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother says she loves her home and doesn't feel the need to move out. She's physically active and has a companion, a professional caregiver who spends 3 hours with her every day.
Well, she cooks for me, and she does a good job. She takes me to appointments and things like that, and whatever I want to do. Sometimes we go to walk in the mall if it's, you know, cold out in the wintertime.
But when her caregiver is not around, Robertson still has company. Rudy, an intelligent home care companion.
Okay, Rudy.
Are you enjoying your day?
Yes.
That's great. Is there anything I can help you with?
You can have a conversation with them, see? It's somebody to talk to and who responds.
Not only talking, but entertaining as well, telling her jokes and even dancing with her.
Would you like to dance with me?
Yes. It's cute, isn't it?
The robotic caregiver was inspired by a need that Anthony Nunez saw as he and his mother cared for his aging grandmother.
As I grew older, I realized we weren't the only family facing this problem. There are thousands of families facing the same issue, most cases even worse.
Nunez founded INF Robotics and created Rudy.
Rudy's a companion, talking with you and engaging you. We're leveraging the artificial intelligence within our platform to help seniors make better decisions to allow them to stay in their home. We're also working with machine learning on our platform and some cognitive computing to identify patterns within the senior's daily habits that could lead to an adverse event, and identifying those ahead of time, and then using our cloud computing on our platform to get that information to the caregivers before something happens.
Rudy is helping a number of clients at Sencura, a non-medical in-home care company founded by Cliff Glier.
We're dealing with older adults that are typically 80, 90, 100 years old. So this kind of technology is very new to them. So there will be some closer looks at it. People, I would say, are interested once they learn more and we have an opportunity to show them Rudy and the capabilities.
Glier stresses that Rudy is not a replacement for human caregivers.
So he's around to help out, where the caregivers typically will come in and may help with some bathing or dressing, things that at this point Rudy can't do. But beyond that, Rudy simply fills the growing gap.
The robot supplements what in-home caregivers do for the growing population of seniors who prefer to age in place, with a little help from friends. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
And you've been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. Thanks so much for joining us on this Thursday. We hope we'll see you again on Friday.